This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Greg Fogel, Senior Policy Specialist, and Sarah Hackney, Grassroots Director of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Greg and Sarah are here today to tell us about the 2014 Farm Bill and the implications for sustainable food and farming systems and for conservation. The 2014 Farm Bill was signed into law by President Obama on February the 7th. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Would you begin by saying a few words about the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition?
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that, Diane. This is Sarah. The National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition has been around for over 25 years, and we're kind of the Washington, D.C. voice for the good food and sustainable agriculture movement. We're based here in Washington, and what we do is make sure that when the federal government is making decisions that impact food and farms and sustainability, that we're at the table and that we bring grassroots voices from around the country, including farmers and eaters, to those tables so they have a say in the decision-making process.
Before we go into more detail, would you give a general overview of the 2014 Farm Bill?
I would characterize the Farm Bill as the primary piece of federal legislation that governs how and what we eat as consumers, how and what we grow as farmers and ranchers, and what kind of research is being done to advance the agricultural system that we have in the United States. There are a multitude of facets that this Farm Bill touches on, everything from renewable energy to food stamps to rural development to organic agriculture. It's a massive piece of legislation that only happens every 5 to 7 years. And this Farm Bill, like Farm Bills before it, really makes quite dramatic changes to the way that food and agricultural system operates. So some of the biggest changes in this bill relative to the last one have to do with farm subsidies. The bill gets rid of what are called direct payments to farmers for growing certain types of commodity crops and replaces that system with a whole host of subsidy payments. It expands a crop insurance program that allows farmers to buy insurance to protect against revenue losses. And it expands quite significantly funding available for a range of new programs for local and regional food systems, for organic agriculture and rural development, and for specialty crops. It's also the biggest public investment in conservation on private lands. The last thing I'd mention that is surprising to a lot of folks is that the Farm Bill is made up primarily of food stamps, now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That's close to 80%, I believe, of Farm Bill funding. So it's only that other 20% that covers all of the rest of those important pieces of the bill.
Would you give just a very brief history of how the 2014 Farm Bill came to be?
Sure. Well, it evolved over the course of several years. It started in 2010. In the fall of 2011, we saw for the first time an actual bill or parts of a bill, the text that the Agriculture Committee, Senate and House Agriculture Committees, actually produced. Until that time, from late 2010 until late 2011, we hadn't actually seen any language, but we had nonetheless had to work to try to get the best Farm Bill we could, knowing that a lot of the decisions were being made behind the scenes. So we first saw some language in the fall of 2011. That initial process, which was part of a much bigger process relating to the debt and the deficit, ended up falling through. And then in 2012, when a new Congress came into power, they essentially had to start the process over again. They used a lot of the language they had come up with in 2011, but they did have to go through debate again at the committee level. They had to bring the bills to the House and Senate floors again. So we went through that whole process for another year. And then in 2013, the House actually defeated the Farm Bill on the floor. It was a great surprise to a lot of people. But because of that, we once again essentially had to start from the beginning in many ways. And it took all of 2013 really to put the pieces in place to get the Farm Bill passed on both the House and the Senate floors. I should mention that the Senate had, during this whole period, passed its version of the Farm Bill multiple times. And then for those two versions of the bill to go to what we call conference, to be negotiated, and for them to work out the differences. And that only just happened. So there were many twists and turns along the way, but much of the language that we see in the final bill was actually first drafted in the middle part of 2011.
In what ways is the new Farm Bill good for sustainable food and farming? What are the highlights?
You know, despite the fact that there's a lot in this bill that's a problem or that folks would consider a mixed bag, there are some pretty big wins as well for folks who are really interested in sustainable food and farms. And the first is that the sum total investment over 10 years in the programs that invest in sustainable food systems is just over $1.2 billion over 10 years. This is a pretty substantial increase from the 2008 bill, and it's definitely the largest investment ever in a farm bill in those kinds of programs. And just as an example of one that I can give that I know has had an impact in Washington State and around the Northwest is the Farmers Market and Local Food Promotion Program. It's an example of the kind of competitive grants that the federal government can offer to help local community organizations, farmers cooperatives, groups that are working to help improve food access, expand farmers markets, launch food hubs, do better, say, sustainable food marketing in a region. That program was at $10 million a year and will now be bumped to $30 million a year. And what that means is that more communities are going to have the opportunity to compete for those dollars and to bring really great projects that help farmers and communities into their towns.
What is most disappointing in the Farm Bill for sustainable food and farming?
Well, I think one of the biggest disappointments was certainly the removal of basic reforms to the commodity and crop insurance programs. Going into conference, at least one of the two bills, and in some cases both of the bills, had language in there to reform the way crop insurance payments are made and the way commodity program payments are made. In the case of the latter, commodity program payments, both bills, the Senate and House versions of the bill, had identical language to limit payments to the most wealthy farmers and to make sure that those payments are going to folks who are actually engaged in the practice of farming rather than, say, absentee landowners or multiple farm managers that might not even ever set foot on the farm. Despite that language being the same in both bills, it was stripped in that final negotiation, which happened behind closed doors, except for, I believe, one meeting that was held publicly. And there are a multitude of reasons for that, but we were very disappointed to see that language taken out of the bill. The other big one was the cut to conservation funding. This is the first time since 1985 that a farm bill has cut direct spending for conservation programs, and it's quite a substantial cut, upwards of $4 billion, and greater than that if you count upcoming cuts that are happening outside of the Farm Bill to conservation and other programs. So it ends up being close to $6 billion over 10 years that will be cut from the conservation title of the Farm Bill.
And I'll just add an example of what that means for conservation is, and again, the federal government's investment in conservation through the Farm Bill is really targeted at working lands and at incentivizing sustainable practices, so helping working farmers with businesses put in place the kind of long-term sustainability measures that are both good for their bottom line and good for the environment. And with these cuts, what that means is literally millions of acres will not be able to be part of those programs. And so we might see fewer things like buffers along streams that provide wildlife habitat and reduce nutrient runoff. So that, you know, that could have direct impacts on things like water quality all across the country because literally millions of acres will no longer be able to enroll in those programs.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Greg Fogel, Senior Policy Specialist, and Sarah Hackney, Grassroots Director of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Our topic is the 2014 Farm Bill, which was signed into law by President Obama on February 7th. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You mentioned changes in subsidies earlier. What are the implications of these changes for sustainable agriculture?
There are two primary ways of looking at the lack of subsidy reform in this bill. The first is from a logical or moral or both standpoint, saying, is it right, does it make sense to be providing taxpayer subsidies to managers that aren't really involved at all in the farm operation, have never set foot on the farm? In some cases, you might have 10 what they consider to be farm managers that are involved legally, and because of that, they can multiply the payments that are made for that operation. In the case of crop insurance, is it right? Does it make sense logically for us to be paying farm companies that are making over $750,000 a year a 70 or 80% subsidy for their crop insurance premiums? These are questions that, you know, we as a coalition have a perspective on, and there are varying perspectives out there, but there's a very compelling argument to be made that the taxpayers should not be subsidizing those particular operators. The other angle on that question is, how does the lack of reform impact smaller and sustainable producers? And what we see across the landscape is more and more land being put into production and land values continuing to increase because these subsidies make it easier for both absentee landowners and for big mega farms to gobble up more and more land, driving prices up and putting more marginal land into production. So you see highly erodible lands, you see pristine native grasslands, all these environmentally sensitive types of land being put into production because the risk and the cost is decreased, is footed by the American taxpayer instead of these large producers.
You mentioned earlier that funding for conservation had been cut in the new Farm Bill, but what is most positive in the Farm Bill for conservation?
The Farm Bill provides billions of dollars each year for conservation of critical natural resources on agricultural land. I certainly do not want to discount that investment. The billions of dollars that are provided for working lands conservation is one of the only tools we have for conserving wildlife habitat, increasing soil retention, improving water quality on working agricultural land. The investments that are made into long-term conservation easement programs, that's one of the most effective tools we have for conserving wetlands, grasslands, highly erodible lands. These are incredibly important resources, and the Farm Bill is really the most important and the largest investment that we make as taxpayers into the conservation of those resources. Two of the most significant wins in this Farm Bill have to do with crop insurance subsidies, actually, and how that ties into conservation efforts. For the first time since 1996, for example, the Farm Bill requires basic wetland and soil conservation in return for federal crop insurance subsidies. So if a producer receives those premium subsidies, that producer will not be able to drain wetlands and will have to implement a conservation plan on highly erodible lands. The other big win in this bill is called a sod saver provision, and what that does essentially is limit the taxpayer premium subsidy for crop insurance on land that is broken out from native prairie. So if a producer puts crops on land that was native prairie or native grassland, that producer will receive a smaller taxpayer premium subsidy for crop insurance. Those are two major steps forward in trying to conserve some of the most critical natural resources. The bill also does a couple of new and innovative things with the conservation title. It consolidates several easement programs into a single umbrella easement program, which will make it easier for producers to enroll in the program, make it easier for USDA, the Department of Agriculture, to administer that program. It also extends funding for that umbrella conservation easement program, whereas before, funding for that program was limited to a shorter period. And then finally, it creates a new regional partnership program, which would allow the Department of Agriculture to partner with nonprofit organizations and other entities to work with producers in targeted areas on conservation projects.
And how effective will the bill be overall for promoting conservation on farms?
Well, we've seen what the Farm Bill conservation programs can do since 1985. The first Farm Bill conservation programs were created in the 85 Farm Bill, and since then, they've had an enormous impact across the country. We've seen millions of tons of soil conserved on the farm. We've seen tens of millions of acres of grass and wetlands conserved. And in many ways, this Farm Bill renews that investment. I think the cut to the conservation title, the $2 billion cut to the Conservation Stewardship Program, for example, will certainly have an impact insofar as fewer farmers will be able to access the program. There's no doubt about that. But the overall investment, without this investment that the Farm Bill makes into conservation of resources on working farmlands, we would be in a much worse off position if we did not have that public investment.
To what extent does the Farm Bill support renewable energy?
Well, the Farm Bill supports renewable energy through several programs. The program that is perhaps most important for renewable energy development on farms and also for energy conservation on farms is called the Rural Energy for America program. This program helps farmers limit their use of energy on their farms and therefore save costs, but also actually produce some of their own energy on their farms through a variety of mechanisms. I mentioned when we were talking about easements that the Farm Bill extended funding for that program, whereas before it, that funding had been limited to a shorter number of years. That's the same for this Rural Energy for America program. The 2014 Farm Bill, for the first time, makes funding for that program what we call permanent, which means essentially that it sets it on autopilot. So funding for that important program will continue in perpetuity until something is done to change that, which is a huge step forward for renewable energy production. The other big program that the Farm Bill funds is called the Biomass Crop Assistance Program. And as opposed to the Rural Energy for America program, which helps with solar panels and wind and energy conservation, Biomass Crop Assistance focuses on bioenergy production, so producing crops on farms for energy production. And over the years, the Biomass Crop Assistance Program has gotten much better in focusing on the production of perennials and the types of crops that actually conserve resources as they're being produced, and less so on first-generation biofuels like corn and corn stover. That's still a problem that we're dealing with and will be pursuing during Farm Bill implementation, but the program is primarily focused on producing what is referred to as next-generation or, in many cases, perennial-based biofuels.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Greg Fogel, Senior Policy Specialist, and Sarah Hackney, Grassroots Director of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Our topic is the 2014 Farm Bill, which was signed into law by President Obama on February 7th. To what extent does the Farm Bill support mid and smaller size farms?
That's a great question, Diane, and it does so in a number of ways. And just to take the Northwest, for example, one thing that I want to highlight that's going to be new with this Farm Bill that's going to be particularly of interest to a lot of Northwest growers is that finally, for the first time in this bill, there's a directive for USDA to develop a crop insurance option that works for really highly diversified growers. So right now, you know, if you grow a lot of corn and soy, or if you just grow one or two crops, there's often a really good federal government crop insurance option for your farm. If you have, say, 30 kinds of vegetables on a CSA outside of Seattle, there's not really an option for you. And as you can imagine, that one puts growers sort of at a lot of risk in the event of severe weather, and two, it can also put them at a competitive disadvantage against other growers. And so as part of this Farm Bill, starting within the next, I think, 1 to 2 years, USDA is going to be developing and rolling out a new insurance policy really designed for those diverse growers who've got a lot of different kinds of crops who might mix fruits and vegetables with animals or grain so that they, too, can have better risk protection.
How are beginning farmers affected by the Farm Bill?
There's actually a lot in this bill that's going to be really helpful for beginners. And one of the biggest ways is that there's a program in the Farm Bill that helps community-based organizations work with beginning farmers to do skill training and sort of technical assistance on the ground to help those beginners get access to the tools they need to be successful. That program got a funding increase up to $20 million a year. And again, that's a competitive grants program, so that means that community groups can apply and get that funding to do work that makes sense for the community they work in. So that's one way. And as another example, the Farm Bill also puts into law the authorization for both federal lenders and for the partners they might choose to work with to offer what we call microloans, because one of the most important things, one of the biggest issues for beginning farmers today is access to capital. It's hard enough to get the skills to get access to land, but in addition, a lot of times if they're beginners, they may not have the collateral or the years of experience necessary to get a traditional loan. And so these microloans, they're at a smaller dollar figure, and they have good interest rates and terms that are sort of designed for beginners who are just getting started, who don't need a $1 million loan, who may need $50,000 to get off the ground. And so as part of this Farm Bill, we're going to start to see more of those being made both by government lenders and by, in the near future, sort of nonprofit and community-based institutions like CDFIs.
What are the implications of the Farm Bill for local and regional food systems?
There's a lot. There's so much in this bill that's going to be really helpful for folks who are really interested in local and regional food efforts. From the example we talked about earlier, which was the farmers market and local food competitive dollars, that's a really big one. There's also funding in this Farm Bill for the first time for what are called SNAP incentives. Folks may have heard of programs like Double Up Food Bucks in parts of the country where if you receive federal food stamp SNAP benefits, you can go to, say, a farmer's market and have your dollars doubled in value at that market. It's a win-win in that it brings more dollars for local growers and it helps low-income families get more access to fresh fruits and vegetables. So that's a part of the Farm Bill now with competitive money for the first time. That's a huge thing. It's a really great thing. Also, just another example of a small one for local and regional food systems is there's some improvements in the language that will make it easier for farmers who might run a community-supported agriculture program, a CSA, to accept payments from SNAP shoppers as well. Because that's been an issue, I know, in certain parts where a CSA says, I'd love to offer my product to folks on SNAP, but there were just technical details that got in the way, and this Farm Bill is going to help take steps to fix that. I guess the sort of big picture approach for local and regional food systems is there's going to be more federal investment in programs that help communities and groups of farmers approach solutions to getting more local and regional food into communities, both to directly help the farmers and to help the community groups and activists who want to help make that happen.
How did organic agriculture fare in the bill?
Organic agriculture fared quite well in the bill. One of the most important programs for organic producers, the National Organic Certification Cost Share Program. This is a program that helps share the cost of getting certified as an organic producer, was increased in funding from $22 million in the last Farm Bill over the five-year period to close to $60 million in this Farm Bill over the five-year period. So that's nearly $12 million a year. There are several research and data collection programs that help organic producers. The Organic Data Initiative helps collect and distribute market data so that the industry and producers have an idea of what the trends are and so that the government has an idea of where the industry is going. That program received $5 million over 5 years. Not a huge sum, but it is quite substantial relative to what we've seen dedicated to that program over the last couple of years. And then within the research title, the Organic Agriculture Research and Extension Initiative, what we call here OREI, received a substantial bump up in funding. So it went from $81 million over 5 years in the last Farm Bill to $100 million over 5 years in this Farm Bill, so $20 million roughly per year. And that program will help USDA work more closely with organic producers to develop the research and the data and conduct the extension that they need to be doing to help organic producers improve their operation and access markets.
And I'll add an example here. So both Oregon State and Washington State universities are national leaders when it comes to sustainable and organic agriculture research. And what this means for them is it's an opportunity to compete for research funds to help them continue that kind of work. And one of the challenges when you're a researcher is There are simply limited pools of funding, especially if you're doing research in sustainable and organic methods. And so these federal dollars are one of the biggest and most important national sources of that kind of research money. And having the ability to apply for and compete for those dollars is absolutely a critical piece of thinking about a sustainable agriculture future.
In your view, what will be the net effect of the 2014 Farm Bill for promoting sustainable agriculture and conservation?
The 2014 Farm Bill will go a long way toward helping move sustainable agriculture priorities forward. It's important to reflect back on where we were just in the last couple of years. Many of the programs that we care deeply about as advocates for those pursuing sustainable agriculture had no funding in a post-2008 Farm Bill world. That Farm Bill expired, and in the extension that followed, programs like the Organic Research Extension Initiative, OREI, the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, the Grasslands Reserve Program, a whole host of important programs that fund sustainable agriculture priorities were left without any money. And the fact that this Farm Bill, the 2014 Farm Bill, invests over $1 billion in getting those programs off the ground and running, and in some cases increases funding levels for those programs above what was in the 2008 Farm Bill, is a substantial step forward. It will go a long way toward helping producers and organizations and communities develop local and regional food systems, develop the next generation of farmers, develop the renewable energy resources that we need, and conserve natural resources on the landscape. So overall, I think it's a major step forward for sustainable agriculture in that respect. There are certainly things that we are not celebrating in this Farm Bill. We talked a little bit about the lack of subsidy reform and how that will impact producers. We talked about the cuts to conservation overall. But I will say that that renewed investment in these smaller programs is a major step forward.
Yeah, and there's a reason, if you look at the press coverage or the press statements around this bill the last few weeks, that there's a reason that nobody's praising it to the high heavens. Just about anyone you talk to would really like to see a better bill, would like to see more investments or more reform or, you know, improvements. But at the end of the day, while we would all like to have seen a better bill, stronger investments in sustainable ag, much more reform, none of these cuts to conservation, none of these cuts to the food stamp program, to SNAP, at the end of the day, what this does do is it gets boots on the ground and it gets things happening in a way that hasn't been possible for the last 2 years without a bill. And it buys us some time and some investment in that better future. And it ensures that next time around, our community of folks, of organizations and farmers and activists will be all the more prepared to take things even farther next time and to really get a bill that much more accurately reflects our priorities and our needs.
Well, thanks so much for being here. You were just listening to Greg Fogel, Senior Policy Specialist, and Sarah Hackney, Grassroots Director of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. For more information, check on the web at sustainableagriculture.net. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.